Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Every Monday, we discuss a wide range of issues that affect our planet. Today, we are discussing glyphosate. Scientists call it glyphosate. You probably know it as Monsanto's Roundup. It's the world's most popular weed killer. It was introduced in 1974 by Monsanto, the largest and most profitable agrochemical company in the world. Tens of millions of pounds of Roundup is used every year on everyday foods, including corn, alfalfa, oranges, avocados, apples, grapes, grapefruit, and almonds. For the past three decades, glyphosate has become the world's most used pesticide. In her new book, Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science, today's guest, journalist Carrie Gillum, argues that for decades, Roundup has been touted as safe enough to drink, but a growing body of evidence indicates just the opposite, with research tying the chemical to cancers and a host of other health threats. It's not clear how much Roundup residue remains in your salad, your sandwich, or your healthy snack, largely because regulators have decided not to test it. Last year, California became the only state in the country to label Roundup as a carcinogen. Monsanto is now suing the state of California. The World Health Organization has labeled it as a probable carcinogen. Carrie Gillum has covered corporate America, food, and farming for 25 years. She spent 20 of those years delving into the dealings of Monsanto. Carrie Gillum is research director for U.S. Right to Know. That's a nonprofit working for transparency and accountability in the U.S. food system. Carrie is a former correspondent for Reuters International News Service. In October, she testified in front of an EU Parliament hearing on Roundup. She said the story of Monsanto's top-selling chemical is not one of truth, but one of deceit. Hi, Carrie. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi there. Thanks for having me.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us. Carrie, you have been covering Monsanto for 20 years. In your book, you write that it's been about 20 years since you first walked into the corporate headquarters of the company. And at one time, you were actually a devoted fan of Monsanto's hit product, Roundup. You used it liberally in your backyard to keep weeds at bay. But over the years, your research and your reporting expanded to include doubts about the benefit of genetically modified organisms and the chemicals used on them. Give us a little bit about your background and your journey to where, talk about how you got to where you are today.
Well, sure. So, I've been a reporter, you know, for my entire career. In 1998, Reuters assigned me to move to Kansas City and start covering this, you know, big new world of food and agriculture. I had been a banking reporter. I'd written about commercial real estate. I didn't really know anything about food and farming. And as you said, you know, I loved Roundup. I used it in my yard, you know, and around my garden to take out weeds. I didn't worry about, pesticides that might be in my lunch, and these brand new things called GMOs, genetically engineered crops, were being rolled out into the marketplace by Monsanto. So it was my job to learn everything I could about them, about the technology, about the changes that they were bringing to food production, not only in the United States but around the world. And these chemicals that were used in conjunction with these new GMOs. And, of course, most of the GMOs were then and are now designed to do one thing, and that's to be sprayed directly with this herbicide, glyphosate, or Roundup. And Monsanto brought them to market in the 90s because their patent on glyphosate was expiring in the year 2000, and they were looking for a way to not only expand their domination in agriculture, but to lock down, you know, their sales and their share of the glyphosate market. So farmers loved it. They loved the Roundup Ready crops. They loved Roundup. And I reported on it and tried to learn everything I could. And over the years, yeah, I mean, as the research developed, showing harm associated with this chemical, and the environmental effects began to become really apparent, you know, my view did change. And the book really is, as you said, sort of the culmination of these last 20 years of watching the evolution and watching the evidence of harm come to light and the company's efforts to try to hide all of that.
I was talking with my mom about your book yesterday, and she said, oh, yeah, my neighbors use Roundup, and all you can do is ask them to stop using it. My mom used to use it. She stopped using it. So it's used by people who garden, and then it's used by major corporations. Every year, as you report in your book, more than 300 million pounds of Roundup is dumped on fields, lawns, and gardens across the country. 300 million pounds. That's a lot of this chemical.
Yeah, it sure is. And of course, in the mid-1990s, before the introduction of genetically engineered crops, it was around 40 million pounds a year of glyphosate. And, you know, it's just exploded in use because of the GMO crops. And as you said, I mean, farmers are not the only ones using this. And it's not only on GMO crops. It's been used in conjunction with the production of more than 70 different types of food crops. And Monsanto's encouraged farmers to spray it directly over such things as alfalfa, wheat, barley, oats, you know, as well as soybeans and cotton and canola and that sort of thing. So it's in our air, it's in our water, it's in our soil, it's found in our own bodies, you know, the residues are in our foods. It's really very, very pervasive in our world today. And I think it's for that reason I chose to focus on this chemical and this company. It's really a poster child for what I see as much bigger and more worrisome problems with pervasive pesticide use in our world, but really Monsanto and this chemical and the way that they have controlled not only the marketplace, but the story, right, around the safety of this chemical is really illustrative of some big problems we have with truth and transparency about chemicals in our world today.
Let's talk about the history of regulation. In your book, you write that by 1993, the EPA was trumpeting the safety of Monsanto's herbicide. EPA's worst-case risk assessment of glyphosate's many registered food uses concludes that human dietary exposure and risk are minimal. Existing and proposed tolerances have been reassessed, and no significant changes are needed to protect the public. I remember watching that documentary, The World According to Monsanto. And under the Clinton administration, when a lot of these chemicals from Monsanto really took off, a few people in the administration said, we really need to look at this and regulate this. But others said, we cannot get in the way of technological advancements. We have to allow, we have to give the company basically free rein to get these chemicals out there.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a real corporate-friendly, you know, policy in Washington, D.C. for decades, right? You know, we've had it through Republican administrations and Democratic administrations. We certainly see it now in the Trump administration, probably more so than ever before. But you're right. I mean, one thing that came about in the research and that is really alarming is that the early, very, very early warning signs were clear to the EPA. One of the very first major studies done on glyphosate in 1983, when the EPA toxicologists looked at it, they said, wow, this stuff looks like it causes cancer. It's causing these rare tumors in the laboratory mice that are dosed with it. And no tumors are being seen in these mice that are not dosed with it. And they were worried about it, and they wanted to classify it as a possible carcinogen. Monsanto came in and fought them on that, brought in upper management, brought in their own pathologist to argue that the EPA scientists were looking at it wrong. They weren't figuring it out correctly. And it took them till about 1993 to get the EPA to agree with Monsanto and to reverse course and to say that it didn't look like it caused cancer at all. And that's the, party line that they've maintained ever since then, despite, you know, scientific research studies around the world in different countries that have shown an array of problems associated with exposure to this chemical. Everything from non-Hodgkin lymphoma to acute myeloid leukemia to problems with the thyroid and pancreas, liver, kidney. As I said, you know, it's pervasive and it's problematic. And that's what the International Agency for Research on Cancer told us in 2015.
When you testified in front of an EU Parliament hearing on Roundup in October, you talked about you and your colleagues obtaining thousands of documents from the EPA, the USDA, the FDA, and public universities. These documents show a long history of deception by Monsanto. You also have internal documents known as the Monsanto Papers. And you say that Monsanto has ghostwritten research papers for regulatory review. They've written alternative assessments. They have put pressure on government agencies like the EPA to make sure that independent scientists are not able to testify at hearings. I mean, the list is really long. What would you say stands out for you the most based on these documents that you and your colleagues have obtained?
You know, that is always such a hard question when people ask me that, because so much of it literally is jaw-dropping, you know, and even though I've been looking at this stuff for two decades, it still stuns me when I read it over again or talk about it. The levels of deception and the length of time and the sophisticated efforts to really fool not only the public, but regulators and lawmakers and others, and to dominate the scientific narrative on this is so alarming. I mean, the ghostwriting maybe is the most easy to sort of explain or to be outraged about. It's Monsanto's own language. This is anyone else's invented. It's the words that they use in their own internal emails, where they talk about, you know, we will just get scientists to put their name on these documents, to put their name, edit and sign. We'll do all the writing. One scientist bragged in an internal review of his, work, bragged about ghostwriting a paper. Another scientist on Monsanto referred to a very important paper that regulators have relied on for years, a paper that was put out in the year 2000. He talked about how they ghostwrote that paper. And essentially, you know, it's trying to make things, proclamations of safety surrounding this chemical look like they've come from independent scientists, when in fact they're being written by Monsanto. And we've seen that not just with scientific papers, but with policy briefs, with things that are going up on websites. We've seen internal discussion of ghostwriting an article that then appeared in Forbes magazine, you know, virtually word for word as to how it was written by a PR guy from Monsanto, yet it looked like it came from an independent scientist once it was published in Forbes magazine. It's really deceptive. And I guess my position is, you know, we don't know if this causes cancer or doesn't cause cancer. You know, maybe you want to disagree about that, or scientists want to debate that. But it's pretty hard to argue that Monsanto hasn't, you know, been deceitful. The memos speak for themselves.
Today, we are speaking with journalist Carrie Gillum about her new book, Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. Carrie Gillum argues that for decades, Roundup has been touted as safe enough to drink, but a growing body of evidence indicates just the opposite. There is research tying the chemical to cancers and a host of other health threats. And we have a slight delay on our line, so that's why Carrie responds just a couple seconds after I ask her a question. If you have any questions or comments for Carrie, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. So many people use Roundup in their yards. Farmers use it. Corporations use it. Every year, more than 300 million pounds of Roundup is dumped on fields, lawns, and gardens across the country. So if you use it and you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you. If you work in science, if you're a public health official and you have concerns, you can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio or leave a comment on, there's so many ways to get in touch on social media. Now, Carrie, it becomes really confusing for a citizen because in 2015, the World Health Organization determined that Roundup is a probable human carcinogen. Monsanto is suing California for requiring glyphosate products to include cancer warnings. But then last year, the EPA quietly announced that Roundup does not cause cancer. So as a citizen who, you know, can maybe read a couple articles about this, you know, what are they to believe? It's very confusing for people.
It certainly is, and that's what the chemical companies want, right? It's comes from the tobacco playbook, and it's called manufacturing doubt. You know, make it difficult for consumers to know what to believe. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, when they made their declaration that it was a probable human carcinogen, that was based on analyzing years and years of published peer-reviewed research from independent scientists. The EPA's evaluation is really based primarily on Monsanto's own research and Monsanto's own assessments of the science. The EPA has been criticized both by its own Office for Research and Development and by a scientific advisory panel that the EPA brought in, and they have been criticized for not following their own guidelines in the way that they've assessed Monsanto science to be as favorable as they have. And California, in terms of wanting to notify consumers, that's part of their Prop 65 law. If the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is considered the elite group of cancer scientists, said something is a probable carcinogen, California feels consumers have a right to know that. They're not banning it. They're simply requiring warning labels. And that's something that Monsanto and the chemical industry really don't want. And that's why they're suing California right now.
Nathan Donnelly, a former cancer researcher who's a senior scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity, wrote an op-ed last month in the Sacramento Bee called Don't Let EPA and Monsanto Hide the Truth on Roundup. 11 state attorneys general, in addition to Monsanto, are pushing to kill the California regulation you just mentioned that will require these cancer warnings. And in this piece, Nathan Donnelly says the conflicting reports could cause people to ask, should I be concerned about the safety of the Roundup in my garden shed? And he writes, the answer, according to the most rigorous analysis of independent peer-reviewed research, is yes, you should. So can you talk to us about some of that independent peer-reviewed research?
Yes. I mean, it, as I said, it's come from all over the world. There are studies, both toxicology studies on laboratory animals, rats and mice and dogs and rabbits, as well as epidemiology studies, case control and cohort studies looking at people who have been exposed, who are exposed, farmers and others. And what the research shows, you know, there are studies, obviously, that show no linkage to cancer, and then there are others that do. And specifically in the epidemiology, the most positive association to a cancer has been found with non-Hodgkin lymphoma, a type of blood cancer. And that's what IARC, or this International Agency for Research on Cancer, looked at. They weighed the epidemiology and the toxicology, and then they also looked at some mechanistic data and some research that had been done in Colombia and other parts of the world where people were exposed to aerial spraying of glyphosate, and they looked at their blood and they were able to see damage to the DNA and to the blood of these people who had been exposed. So when they put all this together, this is why they decided to rate it as they did, as a probable human carcinogen. And it's noteworthy that Monsanto itself, even though they are protesting and proclaiming that this, you know, there is no way this thing could cause cancer and it's not dangerous at all, you see in their internal documents that they talk about that they believe they're going to get a probable carcinogen rating because they know about the epidemiology. They know about the toxicology. They say that they're vulnerable if people look at the science. And they laid out a plan before this classification even came down. They laid out a plan to try to discredit it because they were so certain that the science would show trouble. And they laid out a plan to try to discredit the science.
Journalist Carrie Gillum has been covering Monsanto for 20 years, and her new book is Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. Let's hear from Marie-Louise in Palo Alto. Hi, Marie-Louise. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Yes, one of the things that I think quite a bit of is that we have, you mentioned dogs and cats, and people at times forget that these dogs and cats may jump up in their lap, they walk on the carpets. Some people will have a baby, crawls on the carpet, and they are not affected by the fact that people have stepped in on places where there's Roundup. So that is one thing I'd like to mention. And if I also may mention, at one time in Sweden, insecticides were spread, on the train tracks. They probably are here too. It is to prevent weeds from getting too high. And in Sweden, what people did were they went and sat on the train track and said they had to change this and stop letting this poison be leaking out into the farmlands at the side of the train tracks. And so somebody came up with a steam machine that moves on the tracks. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that because, you know, there are solutions. We can get away from these poisonous things, and Monsanto can keep on lying, I guess. Perhaps not even Agent Orange was deadly. So thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in, Marie-Louise. Carrie, can you talk about what research shows about how Roundup affects animals?
Well, sure. And the research, when I'm speaking of animals, I'm speaking of the toxicology research. And of course, those are on laboratory animals, test animals. And the goal is to find out, of course, not specifically how it affects dogs and cats, but how it could affect people. Because, of course, we don't want to test people in laboratories. But it, as I lay out in my book, in the very first chapter of my book, you know, one of the first warning signs that this farm family had was that their dog died of lymphoma, and he would romp through the farm fields, you know, with the farmer who was spraying Roundup from a backpack applicator. And shortly after the dog died, then the farmer himself came down with non-Hodgkin lymphoma, a very aggressive and horrible type of this cancer. And a number of people, you know, have experienced the same thing. There are now more than 3,500 people in the United States who are suing Monsanto, saying that exposure to Roundup gave them non-Hodgkin lymphoma. It's absorbed through the skin. The science shows, you know, a pretty good absorption through the skin. So you might be spraying it around in your garden, and maybe you feel that it's so safe you don't need to wear gloves, right? Or you don't need to protect yourself, or you don't need to wash your hands aggressively when you're finished. But the science really indicates, you know, that you would be wise to do so if you are going to use it. It's, you know, it's absorbed, it goes through the body, it maintains in the body, it's in our urine, it's found in feces. And as I said, it's not only the occupational exposure, it's dietary exposure. There are residues found in a number of foods, and as well as our drinking water. So
you're talking about the chapter, What Killed Jack McCall, and you report that Jack McCall, it was 69 when he died on December 26, 2015. He had a painful and perplexing battle with an aggressive form of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. This is a cancer that forms in the lymphatic system and can appear almost anywhere in the body. And he shunned pesticide use on his farm except for Roundup. Can you talk a little bit about the farmers, the spouses of farmers, the families of farmers you've interviewed who used Roundup on their farms and are now suing Monsanto?
Yeah, I mean, you hear almost the same thing over and over and over, that they were told it was so safe, right? The distributor where they bought it, or the marketing that they heard, they were told it was so safe. Safer than table salt is something that we hear a lot from the industry. You know, safe enough to drink is something we hear as well. And truthfully, you know, when it was introduced, and comparatively speaking, it is and was much safer on an acute, immediate basis than many other weed killers, many other herbicides out there. There's something called paraquat, for instance, that farmers have used and still use on occasion, that is deadly, very deadly. If you get a few drops accidentally on your tongue, you will most likely die within a week or two. It's a very dangerous job just to be a farmer and to be exposed to pesticides. And so glyphosate was promised and promoted as, you know, so very, very safe. And, you know, part of my research or my argument is that, you know, I think we strayed too far, right? We lost sight of the risks associated with this. All we've heard from Monsanto and the chemical industry is the rewards, touting of the rewards and the safety and the benefit and, you know, this wondrous chemical. And we haven't balanced that out with the risks. And in losing that sense of caution around this chemical, we've really exposed people to these diseases and to danger that they really weren't aware of and weren't paying attention to.
Today's guest, journalist Carrie Gillum, has been covering Monsanto for 20 years. In her new book, Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science, she argues that Monsanto has successfully manipulated public opinion by smearing scientists and arm-twisting regulators. This is Your Call's One Planet series, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a discussion about California's housing affordability crisis. There's an effort brewing to repeal the Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act, which put limits on which types of housing qualify for rent control, and many cities are considering rent control laws. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. We're also putting shows together this week about marijuana and social justice. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, Your Call at KALW.org. And if you'd like to join today's One Planet series, we're talking about Monsanto's Roundup, 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio. We're joined today by journalist Carrie Gillum. She's been writing about Monsanto for 20 years. In October, she testified in front of an EU Parliament hearing on Roundup. She said the story of Monsanto's top-selling chemical is not one of truth, but one of deceit. Her new book is called Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. Before the break, Carrie, we were talking about farmers who are suing Monsanto, and you write that many of the cases are centralized in federal court in San Francisco to be handled by one judge in what promises to be a long and winding battle that could take years to litigate. Carrie, can you talk about that?
Well, I didn't hear most of what you just said, but I heard the first part. You're referring to the federal district court,
yes.
The MDL litigation, I believe.
Yes, I wanted, right,
in
talking
that
about
case,
the farmers.
Right, we have about 320 now. Right. There are about 320 lawsuits now that have been centralized in federal court in San Francisco, and they're part of what is being called multi-district litigation for, you know, handling by one judge. And there is a very important hearing coming up in March. It was scheduled for December, but Monsanto got it delayed until March. And this is what's referred to as a Daubert hearing or a science week science hearing. And the exclusive, point for this entire hearing is to look at the science surrounding cancer and glyphosate and what ties Roundup and glyphosate to cancer. And there will be 5 days of expert witnesses from both sides that will, you know, in sworn testimony, will lay out why they believe or don't believe that this chemical can cause cancer or has caused these non-Hodgkin lymphoma in the different plaintiffs. So that's going to be really fascinating, I think, right there in your city in San Francisco. As I said, it was scheduled for December. Monsanto asked the judge to delay it. They've been trying to get these cases thrown out, of course, and have not been successful. So now this hearing is expected to begin on March the 5th, and I will be there. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'd love to have you in studio when you are here next month. I also wanted to ask you about the decision-making process behind determining the highest level of acceptable pesticides for daily intake. Because we come in contact with so many chemicals in our daily lives. And as you said, just talking about Roundup, it's so pervasive. It's in the air we breathe, our water, our soil. If you buy non-organic foods at a grocery store, it has been tested in bagels, in oatmeal. I was shocked to read in your book that it is sprayed on tea plantations in India and Southeast Asia. So how are the levels determined?
Yeah. Well, and this is a whole another whole thing in my book, right? And so over the years, one thing I've studied is these reports that the USDA and the FDA put out every year. It's part of their job, their task to protect the public, to look at pesticide residues in foods and to test foods every year, thousands of samples, and measure the pesticide residues of weed killers and insecticides and fungicides and things that are used in farming to make sure that they're not at illegally high levels. The EPA sets levels and called MRLs, and says that, you know, if it's over and above these, it could be dangerous. It would be considered illegal. If it's under them, you, the public, you have nothing to worry about. Now, a large number of scientists think that those MRLs and the way they're calculated is flawed, very, very deeply flawed, and we could discuss that in a moment. But interestingly enough, all of these years, the USDA and FDA test foods for pesticide residues. They don't test for glyphosate, even though it's the most widely used, right, agrochemical in the world. And this has been, you know, I've written about this quite a bit. I've pressed them. The Government Accountability Office has pressed them on this and said they need to start doing this testing. USDA was supposed to start last year, and they pulled the project at the last moment. The FDA did start to do some limited testing in 2016, and an FDA chemist found glyphosate at illegally high levels in honey. He found it pervasive in oatmeal products, including baby oatmeal products. And that chemist then, coincidentally or not, was pulled from all pesticide residue testing, and the glyphosate testing was put on hold and suspended. Now, FDA tells me they've resumed that testing, but they have yet to publish any results, and they won't say if or when they'll publish results. I mean, there's really a reluctance by our USDA and FDA to tell us, you know, what levels of glyphosate are in our food. And I find that really alarming. They're supposed to be accountable to the public, and they just are not on this issue.
You report that one of the USDA's excuses for not testing glyphosate has been cost. The agency has said repeatedly over the years that it's too expensive and inefficient to look for glyphosate residues in food headed for American dinner tables. And then you write that the agency says because glyphosate is considered so safe, testing would be a waste of time.
Right, right. I mean, again, the agencies, you see it in FDA, USDA, and EPA, they repeat and they align with the corporate interests. And that's very much the same talking point you hear from Monsanto. It's so safe, there's no reason to test it. There's no need to test it. Now, you know, I find it interesting that it's too expensive for the USDA to do so, but yet we have academic groups, consumer groups, and others that are able to afford to have food products tested and, you know, have found this, again, in soy products and bread products. It's been found in Europe and the United States. I mean, you know, all over the world, if you test it, you're probably going to find it in commonly consumed food products.
So what explains this? Because you have written about the revolving door, people who work for the EPA who then go work for Monsanto. There's a lot of money at stake here. Why do they say this is not important and this is a waste of time?
Well, I mean, again, and this goes to probably a deeper, more deeply rooted problem that we have in American politics. And I think we all understand that corporate power and money, you know, talks in Washington, D.C., right? And we have a system where very powerful corporations can donate money, and they send lobbyists and candidates, lawmakers rely on, you know, being in a favored position with these contributors. And then we have the heads of our USDA and EPA and other regulatory agencies who are political appointees, right, and can be ousted if they're not keeping certain powers happy. You know, we really worship corporate profit and capitalism and Wall Street in this country. And corporate profits quite often are put ahead of public safety. We see that over and over again, not just in the agrochemical industry, you know, but across the board in oil and gas and pharmaceutical issues, climate change to a certain extent, right? And we certainly saw that play out for decades in tobacco. Mm-hmm. We've seen it in industrial chemicals. You know, we have the example now of it's just been going. I think there's a documentary that was just released about DuPont, you know, dumping its toxic C8 industrial chemical that's used to make Teflon into, you know, rivers and drinking supplies of all these little communities and, you know, the people who died of all the cancers. It's and yet they were protected for so many years by our regulators. It's just money talks in Washington. And I certainly don't think that that's the way it should be. But I don't think you can argue that that's not the case.
Journalist Carrie Gillum has been covering Monsanto for 20 years, and she's out with a new book called Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. And if you have any questions or comments for Carrie, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Every year, more than 300 million pounds of Roundup is dumped on fields, lawns, and gardens across the country. It is so pervasive. It's in the air we breathe, our water, our soil, in everyday food products. So if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. And let's hear from Wanda in Berkeley. Hi, Wanda. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm calling because I recently went to a meeting at East Bay Mud, and they're talking about their pesticide plan for weeds, and they are using glyphosate near watershed. And I think that's something the public needs to know, and the public should call people at East Bay Mud to say that we don't want glyphosate being used on weeds near watershed. And for years now, I've heard about Roundup, that it doesn't hurt the plants or people or whatever, and it's like it has some kind of intelligence to only... Now it's being touted as, you know, being something to kill native plants. Only native plants will die. But, you know, this is just more BS, and it's being promoted by the Sierra Club and scientists, experts.
Well, thank you for calling, Wanda. Is it being promoted by the Sierra Club? I haven't heard of that, Carrie.
Well, that caught me by surprise as well. I don't know. I know Sierra Club has been pretty supportive of my work and my book, and that would be alarming, but it could be true. You know, glyphosate, as I said, you know, has been seen as sort of the magic solution by so many cities and counties and states. And yes, sprayed along, you know, waterways in areas where it's going to be going into waterways. And science has certainly shown us that it's damaging to aquatic organisms as well as soil organisms. And, you know, there are people around the country. I was just in Irvine. There's a group called Toxic Irvine. There are many people in communities around the country who, as they become educated and aware, are reaching out, you know, just as the caller said, and reaching out to their lawmakers or their representatives, you know, on a local level or state or federal, and saying, no, we don't want this. You know, you answer to us, and we don't want this. We don't want it in our parks where our kids play. You know, bring on the dandelions, right? We're all right with dandelions, but not the weed killer that our dogs and children, you know, play ball in. So it really is up to the consumer to make their, you know, decisions and concerns known, right, to the people who we put in power.
Well, for the record, I did a search, and the Sierra Club has written a number of articles about the unintended consequences and the dangers of glyphosate. Let's go next to William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. In terms of individual action or collective individual action, in Marin County, the public threatened a ballot initiative to prevent the Marin Municipal Water District, when it was considering using pesticides in the water district, the public organized and said, well, we'll have a ballot initiative that prevents it, and the water district decided not to use them. So I would urge that people consider within their jurisdictions how they can take action, either by electing people to these boards who oppose the use of pesticides, or by having a ballot initiative. And I think you'll find great political support for the direct approach, and it also creates in the public a feeling, a correct feeling of empowerment.
All right. Thank you for that. What about that, Carrie? The Marin board voted to use the option to use Roundup if absolutely necessary. It was a 3-2 vote, but the goal is continued progress, including zero use of glyphosate.
Right. Right. Marin County is, I think, moving in the right direction. There are, as I said, a number of groups around the country, maybe more progressive in California. You know, you guys are always ahead of the curve out there. But this is really, again, bigger than one chemical, bigger than glyphosate, bigger than Monsanto. This is about an array of pesticides that are used so pervasively and almost without thought to what they ramifications could be for the our children and our elderly and, you know, our health. Our National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences director, Linda Birnbaum, and some associated scientists put out seven different papers in December, and they are really trying to, it's a call to arms or a call to awareness that pesticides are so dangerous, and the science is not keeping up, or the regulators are not keeping up with the science and not adequately protecting the public. Pesticides are tied directly to, you know, rising incidence of cancer and other diseases. And I'm pretty sure your listeners know someone with cancer or have experienced cancer in their own lives or their own families. And environmental contaminants, including these weed killers and insecticides and fungicides that are in our food and our soil and our water, are contributing to this. It matters. You know, it's something that, you know, we ignore at our own peril. So glyphosate, again, in Monsanto, one example, but it's a bigger problem that we all need to be aware of.
Can you talk a little bit more about citizen action? What do you think, what else do you think is effective in terms of taking on this issue, whether it's at the ballot box or through legislation?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many ways, right? I mean, you can vote with your pocketbook, right? You can buy organic food, which synthetic pesticides are not allowed to be used in the production of organic food. You can band together and go to your city council meeting or your school district or your water board or take it to Washington. You know, I know people who go and, you know, walk the halls, right, of Capitol Hill. But I think it is important for educated and informed consumers to share the message with others and to make that position known, right, to people in power, and vote with your pocketbook, vote at the ballot box. There's a hearing tomorrow in Washington, D.C., which is sort of the epitome of this, you know, corporate takeover of our regulatory system. Monsanto orchestrated this whole thing, and it's essentially to try to discredit international cancer scientists and to defund international cancer scientists. The hearing is in the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, and it's being run by Republican Lamar Smith, and that's tomorrow. So if people want to weigh in on that and let Lamar Smith and Andy Biggs and the others running that hearing know, you know, they're very concerned about the cancer scientists calling glyphosate a probable carcinogen. You know, I think the public is more worried about cancer warnings.
Why don't you take a drink of water, Carrie? Today we're speaking with journalist Carrie Gillum about her new book, Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. She has been covering Monsanto for 20 years, and she and her colleagues have obtained thousands of documents from various agencies, the EPA, USDA, FDA, and public universities, documenting a long history of deception. They also have internal documents known as the Monsanto Papers. And Carrie, I mean, you have so many stories about independent scientists who were supposed to testify in front of the EPA, but after pressure from the pesticide industry, they were disinvited. Can you talk about some of the pressure that independent scientists are under?
Yeah, we just did a webinar last week with a scientist from Emory University, and she talked about that. And there are many examples, as you said, of scientists who, you know, just want to do their work and to publish independent research. And these are both academic scientists and scientists from within our own federal agencies who have repeatedly come forward with stories of having their work suppressed, edited, censored, if in any way, you know, they raise alarm bells or threaten the agenda of powerful corporations. And this certainly, you know, there was one example I think that you're referring to with the scientist named Peter Infante. Mm. He's a well-known, globally respected epidemiologist who's consulted with the World Health Organization and others for decades. And he was invited to appear as a expert before the EPA to talk about glyphosate and epidemiology. And the chemical industry, CropLife, which is backed by Monsanto, wrote to the EPA and said they didn't want him on the scientific advisory panel, and the EPA removed him. And, you know, he showed up anyway and gave a public comment, but he was not allowed to be part of the panel because CropLife had told the EPA they didn't want him on there. So that's just one example. You know, there are many, many, many more, but it really shows the power of the corporate hand at work.
Mm. And he says that how can the public even hope to get independent scientific findings if scientists are disinvited from these hearings? Carrie, we have about 5 minutes left. Can you tell us which foods commonly contain traces of Roundup? Is it only conventional, or does it also include organic foods?
So conventional is the primary, you know, way that you would be exposed through the diet. Because, again, you're not supposed to be using glyphosate if you're growing organic. Now, it's pretty hard in this world to keep anything pure. But if you're buying oatmeal, for instance, you know, that's been made with conventionally grown oats, because Monsanto has marketed glyphosate to be sprayed directly on oats shortly before they're harvested, you know, late in their growing season, the residues are typically higher. So you might be thinking you're eating really healthy when you're eating that bowl of oats or oatmeal, but in fact, you might be taking in, you know, residues of this weed killer. Wheat products as well. I was at a meeting a few years ago with wheat growers and wheat industry experts, and a wheat researcher from a university was talking about testing flour samples and how surprised he was to find glyphosate residues in all of these flour samples. So, you know, it's maybe not something you would expect, but it's also sprayed, as I said, on things like lentils and barley, you know, and on soy and corn. And it's really everywhere. You know, I had an orange grower tell me, you know, you don't want people to know what's in their orange juice, for instance. You don't want them to know how much we're using here in our orange groves. So it's a scary thing sometimes to know this information.
Mm. And other than saying that you should always buy organic, which is not always accessible for people. I mean, you know, blueberries can be $5. Things can be very expensive. What other advice would you give people?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing. I don't buy 100% organic because it is expensive, right? But I choose and I pick. Like, I know strawberries, for instance, 20 different types of pesticides the government has found on strawberry samples. Fruits and vegetables in particular are going to have higher prevalence of pesticides typically. So, you know, you just make decisions that are best for your own family. And maybe you buy certain things. Maybe you try to grow some of your own fruits and vegetables if you have that opportunity. Maybe you find a local farmer, or you start, you know, attending farmers markets and talking to the producers and learning more about their practices. Food companies are waking up. I've been to meetings with these food companies, and they are realizing consumers are onto them, right? And they want healthier foods. And so there's a shift in farm country. And the more consumers make their voices heard, you know, the more the food companies will respond. Bond.
We have about a minute left, Carrie. We have a question from Charles, who read your book, and he says, do you have any ideas on how to keep science from being so politicized and how to make those engaging in fraud to be held accountable?
Well, you know what? I was talking to a lawyer about this. I think unless people actually start going to jail when they lie and they deceive the public and they manipulate the science, because you see these big corporations, they pay out hundreds of millions of dollars in damages when they're eventually caught. Mm-hmm. Monsanto was caught lying about PCBs. DuPont was caught lying about these chemicals, C8 chemicals. They pay out, you know, a few hundred million dollars and they go on their merry way. It doesn't touch the profits that they make. So until we start criminally holding people accountable for deceptive tactics, you know, that kill people, you know, I don't think we're going to see change.
Wow. Well, Carrie, thank you so much for joining us. We'd love to have you on the show when you're in town next month.
That would be great.
Thank you. Carrie Gillam has been covering Monsanto for 20 years. Her new book is Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about California's ongoing housing affordability crisis. There's an effort brewing to repeal the Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act, which puts limits on which types of housing qualify for rent control, and many cities are considering passing rent control laws. Your Call is produced here at KALW. If you missed any of our past shows, last week we talked about efforts to protect the Arctic. We talked about the erosion of reproductive choice and media coverage of those issues, how immigration politics are affecting DACA and TPS recipients. We also talked about media coverage of the violence in Afghanistan. You can podcast our show and listen to past shows at yourcallradio.org. You can also leave us a review on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at yourcallradio. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Joss Wilner is our social media producer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.